You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Tuesday show, Rob Rang. Glad to have you joining us for today's show. Lots on tap, including some defensive takeaways from Sunday's loss in Arizona, before we shift attention to Seattle's next opponent, the San Francisco 49ers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, everyone's excited to watch Russ cook for the Seahawks this year. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. After several weeks of waiting, Rob, it may officially be snack season in the Pacific Northwest. The only transaction listed for the Seahawks today, they cut second-year defensive tackle Anthony Rush, who will now hit the waiver wire. While there's no guarantee this will happen, team sources indicated to me that Seattle expects Damon Harrison is going to be ready to play and make his debut against the 49ers on Sunday. He signed with the practice squad on October 7th. He's now entering his fourth week with the team. It seems to me like this would be the week he would be able to come back. He's now had a chance to get back in shape and get acclimated for football, and they absolutely could use some help with their run defense.
Oh, they absolutely can, Corbin. You're right. I mean, statistically, Seattle has struggled against the run in the last couple of weeks especially. You're going up against a San Francisco 49ers squad that, of course, represented the NFC in the Super Bowl a year ago, in large part because of their dominant running game. But the 49ers are playing very well with wins the last couple of weeks against the Rams and the New England Patriots. It's absolutely blowing out New England. So I think that you're absolutely right, Corbin. I think that this is a move in releasing Anthony Rush because Damon Harrison is ready to take over as Seattle's starting run stuffer in the middle. And I think that the timing couldn't be any better.
Yeah, you mentioned the last couple of games. They gave up over 200 rushing yards to the Minnesota Vikings in week 5. And honestly, I thought that the run defense was better than statistics showed on Sunday night in Arizona. The problem was, as they got past the 60-65 play mark, the Cardinals started to find some success against a worn-down Seahawks defense. I thought they did a pretty good job containing Kenyon Drake, and really Kyler Murray, with the exception of a couple runs that he had, including a touchdown run in the second half. I thought they did a pretty good job bottling him up too, but nonetheless, they've given up 360 rushing yards the last two games, so that's dropped them to 13th in the league in rushing yards given up. They're still only giving up 4.1 yards per carry, which is in the top 10 in the league for lowest total. So they haven't been atrocious. The last 2 weeks, though, have not necessarily been good, and they didn't have Anthony Rush available this weekend. He injured his knee in week 5 against the Vikings. I don't know if that's still playing part of the equation here, but Rush being cut today, if he clears waivers, I anticipate he's going to be taking a practice squad spot. Seattle will like to keep him around as insurance, but they're going to be bringing in a former All-Pro, a player at 31 years old that I still think has plenty left in the tank, and they're not going to be asking him to be a starter because you've got Jaren Reed and Puna Ford, but they could absolutely use a 350-pound run stuffer like Harrison, a player, as we've talked about, that is not a great pass rusher necessarily, but I think that he can give you a little more there than some fans may realize, especially from the pass deflection standpoint. That's maybe been the most discouraging part this year. The Seahawks not only have not been able to get sacks, they don't have very many pass deflections as a defensive line either. Damon Harrison has 10 of those in his career. So I think he can find ways to be disruptive in that capacity. And I think the Seahawks really handled this the best way they could. He didn't have a training camp. And as you and I talked about before, this is a big, big, big guy. And so they were going to need a few weeks to be able to get his conditioning where it needs to be, get him back into football shape. And so it sounds like they are going to have snacks available. And again, this is an opponent, the 49ers, love to run the football, and they're as good at running the football as anybody in the National Football League. Even when they have running backs go down, it just seems like they're able to just pick guys up off the street or off their practice squad, and they come in and run for 80 to 100 yards. And so it's a well-oiled machine that they've got in San Francisco. Can't think of a better game for Damon Harrison to make his debut. Going to mix him in with a couple other defensive tackles that they've got there and hope that maybe you can get a good 15 to 20 snaps out of him per game. I don't think they're going to need to ask for much more than that, but if you can use him in short yardage situations particularly, and if he's able to give you around 15 snaps a game, then I think he's going to be well worth the addition at this point of the season.
I absolutely agree with you. And as you said, I mean, we're probably only talking 15 or 20 snaps, but those are going to be key snaps. They're going to be short yardage, whether it be going for first downs or going for touchdowns. That is something, obviously, Seattle was beaten on a couple of fourth downs this past game against Arizona. The Cardinals were able to create some push. We know that against Minnesota, Seattle was able to create that push back, a huge play by the second-year linebacker Cody Barton that really got people excited. But you know, I would kind of take the opposite approach on this, Corbin. I thought the Seattle's run defense has not been as good as their statistics might suggest. I think a big part of that is that opposing offenses are basically being forced to abandon the run early just to try to keep up with Russell Wilson and Seattle's dynamic passing game, or I should say offense in general, but especially their passing game. The quick strike offense that Seattle's had is basically forcing other teams to abandon their running games. Well, as you just said, you know, the 49ers are not going to abandon their running games, even though they've had a plethora of injuries yet again at the running back position. They've got an undrafted free agent right now, Jamichael Hasty out of Baylor, who looked like a future Pro Bowler for the 49ers against the Patriots this past week. So it almost doesn't matter who the 49ers have at the running back position. You know that they are going to run the ball. You know that they are going to be able to try to create their play action game to their superstar tight end, George Kittle. Off of that, so yes, if Damon Harrison is able to give you those 15 to 20 snaps, even if he is not able to get pressures on the quarterback, if he's able to get those big hands up and in the air and be able to tip a pass, then maybe Seattle might be able to steal a turnover in this game. But again, I think that it is it's a testament to the Seahawks planning ahead that they signed Harrison when they did, as you mentioned earlier, October 7th, 20 days ago. That allows Harrison to be able to get himself into shape so that hopefully when he does get onto the field for the Seahawks, he's able to make an immediate impact.
Yep, and again, you couldn't ask for a better game to be bringing Harrison into the fold, and the Seahawks have handled this, as far as I'm concerned, near perfection, bringing him in. And you know he wanted to play for the Seahawks. There's been other teams trying to poach him off the practice squad. He was not going to take those offers. Even Tampa Bay that came in and tried to sign him, not interested. This is where he wants to be. So now he's going to get his first chance to sport a Seahawks uniform, and he's going to be thrown into the fire here against the team's biggest rival in a critical game in the NFC West division. When we come back in the second quarter, it's Throwback Tuesday. Speaking of this rivalry, we're going to look back at that incredible game these two teams played at CenturyLink Field on December 29th last year with the NFC West title on the line. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. If you're like me and can't wait to see Russell Wilson cook for the Seahawks this fall, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me, as always, my sidekick in crime, Rob Rang. It's Throwback Tuesday, Seahawks versus 49ers on tap. These matchups are always exciting. Obviously, the Seahawks for a 5 or 6 year stretch absolutely dominated this series, but the rivalry returned last year with the 49ers coming to Seattle and getting a signature win in Week 17. And that was one of the better football games that we've seen. Of course, it fit the crazy spectrum that we expect every week from the Seahawks. It was the type of thriller that we've anticipated, and really this entire season has been, and much to the chagrin of fans and their blood pressures. But these two teams are going to be rekindling that nasty rivalry on Sunday night. The Niners coming in with some momentum after beating the Rams and the Patriots the last 2 weeks. When these two teams got together last December, there was obviously so much on the line. Both these teams coming in had an opportunity to win the NFC West. It was a de facto division title game. But there were so many other side storylines that you just don't anticipate going into Week 17. And I find it ironic that this is the first point that we're going to bring up, because the Seahawks right now have a very similar situation. Chris Carson's not done for the season like last year, so they're going to get him back. He might even be available this week. We'll have to wait and see. But Carlos Hyde's got a hamstring issue he's dealing with. Travis Homer's got a knee bruise. Right now, the Seahawks are hurting at the running back position. They still haven't gotten Rashad Penny back, and last year they were in a very similar spot. Travis Homer was the only healthy back available, and so, of course, they brought the beast mode out of retirement, something nobody thought was going to happen, and he suited up and played in that game, had 12 carries for the Seahawks in his return to CenturyLink Field. That was obviously one of the biggest storylines going to that week that just nobody could have seen coming.
Well, we couldn't have seen coming that they were going to bring Marshawn Lynch back and that he would play as well as he did. You mentioned, just the number of carries that he had. Also, of course, had a touchdown in this game. And it was a game that I think that unfortunately there's been a lot of Seahawks fans who have seen way too many games like this. The offense started off very slowly for Seattle and then kind of gained some momentum in the second half to make it a very competitive game. San Francisco took a 13-0 lead into the half, but Seattle scored all of its points, 21 points in the second half to tighten things up. Ended up losing ultimately 26-21. As you said, Corbin, it was a de facto division title game, but it wasn't just Marshawn Lynch who was the only injury replacement in this game. We've talked so much about what a role that Chris Carson plays for the Seahawks, as well as Dwayne Brown. And Dwayne Brown was out for the Seahawks in this game. They had George Fant actually was the starter for the Seahawks at that critical left tackle spot. We had all kinds of other injury concerns that the team had. Joey Hunt, of course, was the starting center after Justin Britt had gone down earlier. So there's just, again, there's a lot of different places and different positions.
Quandre Diggs was out too.
Exactly. I mean, you look at the Seattle's safeties, and you had Bradley McDougal, was your starting safety along with
Delano
Hill. And so that's the thing, is that the Seahawks were hamstrung by their struggles with injuries. The 49ers, on the other hand, were getting one of their absolute superstars back in George Kittle, who, of course, was unable to play for the 49ers when Seattle went down to San Francisco earlier in the year and came out victorious. So I'm happy that you started off with Marshawn Lynch. It was a positive story for the Seahawks, just seeing him run back out there onto the field and play with the toughness of which he always did play, because I think that it is very appropriate when you look at this upcoming matchup. Again, as you mentioned, Corbin, the Seahawks and the injury issues they have at the running back position as well as safety, in a lot of ways, this is the carbon copy of a game a year ago. Hopefully, from a Seahawks perspective, it will wind up having a different result.
Yeah, you mentioned the safety spot. Last year, Quandre Diggs was out and Lano Hill was playing for him. Hill's on injured reserve now, but Jamal Adams, it's still up in the air whether he's going to be back this week. The Seahawks do not want to have him come back until he is 100% healthy, and so understandably, with everything they gave up for him this offseason, they don't want to risk having him go out there and re-injure that groin, and suddenly you're looking at potentially missing him another 3-4 games. You don't want to have that cycle play out. And so we don't know if he's going to play. We don't know if Chris Carson's going to play. Carlos Hyde and Travis Homer. Again, they're dealing with injuries. Who knows what the availability is going to look like there. It's a much different situation than it was last December, though, with the COVID-19 protocols. Like Pete Carroll said yesterday, it's a 2 or 3 week process trying to bring in outside free agents. So it's not like they could just call Lynch up again and say, hey, Marshawn, we need you to run the ball for us against San Francisco on Sunday. He'd have to pass all the COVID tests, and he's not going to be in the physical conditioning that he was coming into Seattle last year. Has he been preparing for a few weeks for that opportunity? So I just don't see, you know, this is a much different situation. Obviously, in the middle of the season, the Seahawks are not that desperate where they're going to be going out to do stuff like that. But there were plenty of other storylines in this game, too. With all those injuries, the fact the Seahawks were coming off of a brutal loss to the Cardinals at home, and they had lost several games down the stretch, they were a big underdog going into this game. The Seahawks had all those injuries, and I think people just kind of discarded them going to this game. And as you mentioned, the way that the first half played out, it looked like that narrative really was true. San Francisco built a 13-0 lead, but when you go back and watch that game, it felt like San Francisco left some points on the board. They easily could have been up 21-0 at halftime, and instead, a couple of those promising drives that they had to settle for field goals, which ended up being huge wins for the Seahawks, especially when he got to the second half. And in the first half, the Seahawks were the polar opposite. They went 3 and out their first drive. Then they had a couple of 6-play drives that netted less than 20 yards, and they had to punt on both of those. And then they got stuffed on 4th down on their last drive, the only drive that they had in the second quarter. That was a 9-play drive for around 5 minutes, and San Francisco thwarted them. And so they went into halftime with 0 points and really zero momentum on offense. They just couldn't get anything going, and yet in the second half, everything changed.
It did, and that's the thing, is the Seahawks were able to get some big plays by their superstar wide receivers. So again, it is a little bit of what we've seen in the past. Of course, Tyler Lockett coming off the monster performance this past week against the Arizona Cardinals. So appropriately enough, he was the one who got the Seahawks kind of jump started with a 14-yard pass from Russell Wilson about midway through the third quarter that cut the lead to 13-7. Lynch got his aforementioned touchdown in the beginning of the fourth quarter to cut that lead down to 19-14. Of course, the 49ers had scored another touchdown with their running game. At this time, it was Raheem Mostert, who the first of his 2 touchdowns that he would have in this game for San Francisco. And then the Seahawks came back at the very end of the game, 3 minutes and 40 seconds left, with a DK Metcalf 14-yard pass from Russell Wilson as well. So it does tighten up. And so, again, this is all the more reason why you think that the Seahawks are going to be able to have that similar type of success with Wilson and their dynamic passing attack going in against the 49ers defense that, of course, is missing two of its very best defensive linemen from a year ago. And so that's where I would kind of come back with just how much this 49ers roster, as well as Seattle's roster, has changed from a game that, you know, took place only, 10, 11 months ago. But, of course, the 49ers don't have Nick Bosa anymore. He went down with the injury. They traded away their most consistent defensive lineman overall in DeForest Buckner to the Indianapolis Colts. And they've got another young stud in Javon Kinlaw. But still, this is not quite as fearsome of a San Francisco defense as what it's been in the past. But at the same time, this is also a improving San Francisco offense. And I mention that because in the game that Seattle beat the 49ers in San Francisco, it looked like Jimmy Garoppolo didn't even want to be on the field. At times, the Seahawks really kind of controlled that game. They were the more physical team. But in this past game where the 49ers did beat the Seahawks, Garoppolo had one of his better games that he ever had. I mean, he didn't have a lot of numbers in terms of touchdowns, things like that. Didn't throw a single touchdown. But Corbin, he was 18 of 22. He spread the ball around, and as I mentioned before, he had George Kittle 7 for 7. Every one of his targets was caught by Kittle, which obviously opened up San Francisco's offense. And again, that's where I think that San Francisco is going to try to attack again. And I think it's that much more critical that Seattle was able to get Damon Harrison ready for this game. If you look at the way Seattle tried to defend against the 49ers in this past game, again, this past one in Seattle last year, Seattle started a defensive line that basically averaged 285 pounds. Quentin Jefferson was a starter. Jaron Reed was a starter. Jadeveon Clowney was a starter. And so because of that, you were a little bit lighter than you will be in this game when you're going to have guys like Puna Ford, you're going to have guys like Damon Harrison, guys like LJ Collier, who are just better against the run. And so I do think that Seattle is going to be a little bit better positioned to defend against the 49ers.
We'd be remiss not to mention that last drive from this game. And obviously, it's not the worst ending that Seahawks fans have had to endure in the last decade, but it's certainly probably in the top two or three that the Seahawks got the football back with 2 minutes to play, a little over 2 minutes to play, got the football back, and Russell Wilson, doing what he does, drives his team 72 yards, and they are really close to the goal line. And on fourth down, this was actually the second fourth down that they went for in that drive. The other one, John Ursua made his first and only catch of his rookie season. So talk about an unexpected hero. Nearly got into the end zone. That set up first and goal, and San Francisco held firm the next three plays. Seattle couldn't get into the end zone. And then on fourth down, Russell Wilson finds Jacob Hollister, and a great play there by the 49ers defense turns Hollister away. And I'm telling you, Rob, going back and rewatching that today, he couldn't have been more than maybe an inch away from that football getting past the goal line. It was that close. I mean, you could have put a couple index cards between there, and that's probably the difference between Seattle being NFC West champs and what ultimately happened to them going to Philadelphia as a wild card team the next weekend.
Exactly. And I'm happy that you mentioned Jacob Hollister, because that kind of bounces right off of the point that I was just making before about Seattle's added beef on the defensive line. Look, Jacob Hollister is a good football player. He's quick. He catches the ball very well. He's not real powerful in comparison to other tight ends. And so, you know, you think about the tight ends. That was one of the positions that Seattle looked to improve. They have Will Dissly back from the injury. Obviously, you signed Greg Olsen. You have bigger bodies at that position. So hopefully, again, from a Seattle perspective, if they find themselves in the exact same situation, then you may have a tight end with a little bit more beef to be able to power into the end zone. Same kind of mentality, again, on the defensive line, hopefully being able to slow down San Francisco's rushing attack and make Jimmy Garoppolo have to have another one of those efficient games just to keep the 49ers competitive.
This was really a very even game. Seattle finished with 9 more first downs in the game, but 49ers had 128 rushing yards. The Seahawks had 125. 49ers had 285 passing yards. The Seahawks had 233. Wilson had 2 touchdowns. Garoppolo had none. There were 3 combined sacks in the game, so even though both teams had some guys getting after the quarterback, there weren't very many sacks to speak of, and no turnovers on either side. So it was a very clean game. It just was a tale of two games in one, with the 49ers coming out to that big lead in the first half, and then Seattle roaring back and nearly pulling off the comeback at the end. I know fans don't want to hear this given what has transpired the first 6 games of the season, but you can only hope that you're going to have another thriller like that game here, and maybe this time the Seahawks will find a way to come out on top at CenturyLink Field. When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to wrap up our analysis of Seattle's 37-34 loss to the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday night by going to the defensive side of the football. Some takeaways, both the good and the bad, before we transition to Seattle's Week 8 matchup. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang here on our Tuesday episode. The Seahawks dropped their first game of the season on Sunday. Yesterday, we had the opportunity to look at the offensive side of the football, what went right, what went wrong in the second half in Seattle's eventual collapse that allowed the Cardinals to tie the game and then win in overtime. We're going to switch gears now to the defensive side of the football, and I'm just going to start off with this. As I said yesterday, I think the offense deserves just as much blame for the implosion that happened on Sunday with only 7 points in the second half. But again, that is not abstaining the defense from any blame either. This defense continues to struggle, and there's no way to sugarcoat this. Seattle has been arguably the worst defense in NFL history in a couple of metrics the first six games. The numbers aren't necessarily going to go against that narrative. I tweeted this yesterday. They are making history, and I put it in quotes when I said that. They have surrendered 2,212 passing yards through six games. No NFL team in history has given up more. They also now, through six games, have the record for total yards given up, 2,875. To put that into perspective, Rob, they are giving up nearly 370 passing yards per game. And they gave up almost 400 in this past game to Kyler Murray. It's been consistent. Every game, they are just giving up tons of yardage. And I know that that can be an empty stat, but when it's this many games, that points to some real issues.
Oh, it certainly does. I mean, that's the thing. We've talked about this all the time, that this is a team that clearly is lacking with a dominant defensive lineman, whether it be an interior rusher or an outside rusher. This is a team that really is struggling to find a difference maker. Even last year, Corbin, I mean, you well know that this was not a team that was really effective in terms of generating sacks a year ago. But at the same time, when Jadeveon Clowney was healthy, everybody knew what a difference maker he was. It's appropriate to refer to him, given that the best game of his life with the Seahawks, of course, was against the same San Francisco 49ers squad a year ago. But that's the thing, is they don't have that player now. And the rookies that they've drafted, obviously Daryl Taylor has not even gone to the field. The Seahawks, for whatever reason, almost refused to put Alton Robinson onto the field.
Which I don't get.
Yeah, and so regardless of why that they're not using those players, the players that they are using just aren't getting the job done. And I think that some of that, as you kind of mentioned, I think that some of that is some empty statistics. I really do believe that the game has changed so much that you can be successful in today's modern NFL. If you have an offense as good as Seattle's, that your defense can be historically bad and you still wind up having a lot of success. Obviously, the Seahawks are 5-1, just a hair away from being 6-0. And as you mentioned, their offense being every bit as much to blame with for this last loss against Arizona than the defense was in a lot of ways. I would absolutely agree with that. But at the same time, until Seattle makes some type of changes and until their offense proves that they can score every single time, then this defense is going to continue to be an issue. Fortunately for the Seahawks, going up against the 49ers team here that is also having some real injury issues of its own, also is a team that has struggled with being a little bit one-dimensional from the offensive side of the ball. This does look like a game that the Seahawks should be able to kind of improve against the 49ers.
I want to discuss a few of the negatives here real quick, just because I just want to get them out of the way, because there were a lot of good things on the defensive side of the football that happened on Sunday night in Arizona. But I'm going to start off with the Alton Robinson issue, because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he only played 7 snaps on Sunday night, if I remember correctly. And seeing how the Seahawks have struggled to put pressure on quarterbacks, and in this game, they reached a new low. And I understand that there were schematic stuff behind it. You don't want to get too aggressive pressuring Kyler Murray because you know what he can do with his legs. Your edge rushers especially have to be very careful about how far they get upfield. I mean, there were some things there schematically in the game plan that were going to limit the number of times that they were able to get to Kyler Murray, but the couple times that they did, they couldn't get him to the ground. Jaron Reed had a sack in the end zone that would have been a safety, and he whiffed on it. Bobby Wagner had an opportunity, but only could get one hand on Murray, and we know that you're not going to get Murray to the ground as shifty as he is with just one hand on him. And so they only had a couple of pressures in this game. I went back and watched the film. There were only 3 of them that I listed, and one of them I was being really generous on, and no quarterback hits. I suppose you could say, well, Bobby Wagner and Jaron Reed touched Kyler Murray, but he ended up getting away. So neither one of those were counted as quarterback hits. It was ugly, and I'm just wondering at this point, What does Alton Robinson have to do to get more opportunities out there? Because your veterans aren't producing, at least from a pass rushing standpoint. They're not getting after the quarterback. They're not getting home. Why not just see what the young guys can do? You know they're going to make some mistakes, but let them make those mistakes now, and that's going to help them grow as players quicker so that they can really contribute for your team later this season.
Well, I think normally that makes a lot of sense. I think against specifically the Atlanta or the Arizona Cardinals, just given how dynamic the quarterback is, then that can get you some, you know, into some trouble. We talked about in our preview of that game, Corbin, how Seattle's defensive line was going to have to be really, really strategic in keeping their discipline and not just paying their ears back. And I think that is one of the things that young players often will do, and then they're not quite as reliable. That said, as Seattle was continuing to allow big yardage, and I would kind of disagree with you a little bit. I thought the Arizona Cardinals ran the ball when they wanted to against Seattle, whether it be Kenyon Drake, whether it be his injury replacement, Chase Edmonds, later in the game. I thought that the Cardinals basically were every bit as productive in running the football as the Seahawks were, and I was not expecting that. Because I don't think that the Cardinals, frankly, are as good at blocking at the point of attack. I know that their running backs aren't as gifted as Seattle's running backs are. So I thought that was a real disappointment. And so, number one concern I have for Seattle was the lack of any type of consistent pass rush. As you talked about, not a single sack. This has become an every game storyline. I'm not so much worried about the passing yardage. As I mentioned before, I would not be surprised at all if Seattle gives up over 300 passing yards to every single quarterback they face all year long. And yet I still believe that they are one of the truly elite teams in all of the NFL. So I don't care about the passing statistics so much, but I do care about the rushing yardage. I do care about your ability or inability to be able to stop teams on fourth down. Obviously, Arizona was able to get fourth down conversions in this game and some important ones at that. But to me, the single biggest thing, Corbin, that I'm concerned about is something that ever since Pete Carroll joined as Seahawks head coach, I have noticed a difference in tackling with the Seahawks. So this is one of the best tackling teams, or at least has been one of the best tackling teams in all of the NFL. And yet, I saw so many missed tackles. And again, part of that is, you got to give Arizona Cardinals credit. We talked about Kyler Murray and how difficult he is to tackle in the open field. You mentioned a player like Bobby Wagner, obviously a future Hall of Famer, who just was barely able to even get one hand on Kyler Murray, much less two. But we are seeing the same players make, open or miss open field tackles repeatedly. And I don't want to just blame Quandre Diggs, but a couple of them were him. And that's critical at the safety position, especially when you're going up against the offense in this next game, the 49ers, that have the variety of weapons that they do. The Seahawks need Jamal Adams back. They need Quandre Diggs playing better. And if they can get that, then I think everything else will start to kind of come together a little bit better.
I'm glad you mentioned missed tackles, because that's what I had next to my list here. And you and I can disagree on the running game thing, because up until Chase Edmonds busted a 32-yarder in overtime, the running backs for the Cardinals had been held in check. I mean, when you hold Kenyon Drake to 34 yards on 14 carries, I'm taking that every day of the week. And Kyler Murray, you take an 18-yarder out of the equation, he would have had under 50 yards on 13 carries. I thought Seattle did a fairly decent job. When they got tired, though, they really started to fall apart late in that game. But the missed tackles are extremely concerning. And again, I'm with you. You don't want to call out just one guy. And there were a few other players that had issues with this on Sunday night. But Quandre Diggs, I think the big issue that I've had with him, we saw him get an interception, which finally got his hands on the ball. You're not seeing teams hit deep on verticals and seam routes and post routes. So he's doing his job in that regard. He has been an eraser in center field still, even if his numbers aren't indicating it. My problem is every game, one or two tackles, and I think he might have had three of them this game. He has missed a bunch of them. There are just too many times where he's not getting a wrap on players. He's just trying to come up and use a shoulder to get them down. That's not going to work against Kyler Murray. That's not going to work against Chase Edmonds or Kenyon Drake. You've got to wrap up in this league, and so I am concerned with that. You're seeing some players out there that are doing a good job. Bobby Wagner missed a couple tackles in this game. So that is something they absolutely have to clean up. I want to talk about one major positive that came out of this game for me, though. And it's the same position as Bobby Wagner. I thought Jordan Brooks, you can see why the Seahawks are so excited about his potential. I thought when he played, most of his snaps were in the first half. They were in nickel a lot in the second half. And so they didn't have the third linebacker in the field. Nickel, they're still using KJ Wright with Bobby Wagner. But the play that Jordan Brooks made, the awareness and the closing speed and the perfect pursuit angle on that goal line stand they had after Buda Baker's interception, he looked like he got shot out of a cannon. And again, it was a perfect angle. You just don't see many linebackers in this league. They're going to be able to run down Kyler Murray on a quarterback sweep to the left. But he beat the pulling guard coming across because, for one thing, he noticed it immediately. One step and he's gone. He knows where the football's going. So the instinct show up, the speed show up, and he makes a tackle for a loss on Murray there. Next play, they flushed Murray out of the pocket, and he has to throw the ball out of the back of the end zone. Turnover on downs. He finished with 7 tackles and a tackle for a loss on 38 snaps. So nearly 25% of the defensive snaps he was on the field, he had a tackle. He also had 2 plays in coverage where he didn't get a pass defense, but he was glued to the tight end and the throws felt incomplete. So I thought for his first NFL start, not getting hurt this game, being able to get nearly 40 reps, very encouraged by what I saw from Jordan Brooks. And I think they're going to have a very hard time keeping him off the field here moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that it was a strong first performance from Jordan Brooks, and I thought that it made a lot of sense. Kind of like we talked about with Damon Harrison, it makes sense for the Seahawks to have brought him along, kind of specifically targeting this particular game against the run-heavy 49ers. I thought that it made a lot of sense for the Seahawks. Obviously, injuries were part of it, but to use Jordan Brooks in this game against the Cardinals, obviously Brooks, Texas Tech. He is going to have some familiarity with Cliff Kingsbury, his former head coach, as well as with Kyler Murray playing against him in the Big 12. He's going to have a little bit more familiarity to go along with that exceptional athletic ability that you had mentioned before. So again, I think that made sense. It's all the more reason why I think that the Seahawks are going to basically view the loss to Arizona as basically stubbing their toe, that everything, if they just kind of continue to do what they do, that they should be fine, that everything is kind of going to plan. It remains to be seen if that is in fact the case. They obviously have a critical matchup this week against the 49ers.
Still got to do a better job getting off the field on third downs. You have to avoid some of those penalties. The one on Bobby Wagner, I still think, was one of the worst penalties I've ever seen called in an NFL game. But it was called. There's nothing you can do about it. The Cardinals, instead of punting, went down and they scored a touchdown to make it 27-24. The Benson Maioa penalty was killer towards the end of the game. That really, to me, was the biggest play of the game. Because if the Cardinals have to settle for the field goal there, it's much tougher with the time that was given to them at the end of the game to go down and put 6 points on the board and then get your extra point. And so that really was a game changer too. They just have to do a better job getting off the field and stop shooting yourself in the foot, whether that's missed tackles, penalties, you name it. You have those issues against the 49ers, the way they run the football and the receivers, the way they can create after the catch, especially now their first rounder, Brandon Ayuk, seems to be hitting his stride as a rookie. And so you've got to be able to wrap up and get guys to the ground. If you don't do that, this is going to be a really difficult game against Kyle Shanahan's offense. So they've got to learn from the mistakes they made here, finally resulting in a loss if they want to get back in the winner's column in week 8. You can follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts by visiting our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Wednesday show, it's time to start breaking down the matchups. Seahawks versus 49ers, one of the nastiest rivalries in the NFL. We'll look at some of the matchups that the Seahawks will need to exploit when they're on offense and what they need to do on defense to slow down San Francisco's high-powered attack. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks!